Hi, everybody. This is Marlene with Miami Ghost Chronicle, Stories of the Supernatural. And I am out here at Homestead, okay, very close to an area by the Air Force Reserve Base, which less than 2 years ago, the area around it was the site of a very horrific murder. And what happened back in July of 2015 is that a 17-year-old by the name of Jose Guardado, who was attending Job Corps, was lured out to, which very similar to what's behind me, because as you can tell, I am right here, very close to the site of Job Corps and the reserve base. So basically what they did was they lured this young man who was attending Job Corps for vocational training. Five other classmates lured him out to these woods. And when he got there, they had already dug a shallow grave. And supposedly, allegedly, one of them, which I think was his roommate at one time here in Job Corps, even they all attended Job Corps, or one of them, his roommate, hacked him with a machete. And allegedly, all the four other watched. Okay, and there's even reports that the one girl in the group who had missed part of the beginning of this boy's murder, she was upset and she ended up having sex even close to the grave. And from what I understand, he was buried while most probably still alive. And as a matter of fact, after this event is when Job Corps, they finally closed. And it was this young man's, Jose Guardado's brother, who found him like about a week later because the family hadn't heard from him. And they basically, the family got together and started searching for him. And it was his own brother who found his remains in that shallow grave in the woods like this, like behind me, or what was left of him. Now, what's happening is that back in February of this year, they took the death penalty off the table for four of the accused because of their age. I think they're still going to be facing life in prison. The only one that still, I believe, has a possibility of facing the death penalty is the young man, Lassimo Barbello, who allegedly, again, is the one that wielded the machete and attacked him and killed him. Okay, the reason why I'm coming out here is because even now I've gotten reports of people hearing strange noises out in this area. Okay, I mean, there's like a park area way up there. And I mean, it's normal you're going to hear different noises, but I've gotten reports from different sources that they've heard a lot of unusual like moans and not your typical stuff of when somebody's out there, but really scary stuff. A lot of people getting very unsettled feelings. And also, you know, one of the things that they report about this is that supposedly this group of students at Job Corps had been planning this for 2 weeks. Okay, in other words, this was not like something as horrible as it is just on the face of it. Okay, they actually planned this for 2 weeks. And one of the reports is that this young man might have owed his roommate money. There's different stories floating around there, even though from what I understand, this young man was a really nice kid who was just here trying to get training to make his way in life. And there's also the possibility I've heard that he might have even been bullied prior. But bottom line, it makes you wonder how not one, but you got one person to get all these companions to sit down and mastermind not only the murder of another human being, but the way they killed him, which was with a machete. And in my opinion, it almost has almost like these ritualistic overtones of actually burying him while he's still alive. You know, that report that you have one of the only female participant having sex either on the grave or close by the grave. All these things like really make you wonder, you know, what was going on with this, you know, with this group of, and I don't want to say kids because honestly, chronologically, I don't think they're children, you know, and that you know, none of them came forward even after the fact and said, you know, we made a mistake. If it wasn't for the fact that Jose's brother found his grave, I guess it would have been a mystery as to where or what happened to Jose, or, you know, if a report or if police were going to be able to find him. There was also evidence that they had tried to burn his, you know, evidence of the clothing, their clothing. A lot of it was recovered. But again, you know, I'm going to be following up. I'm going to include some of the news reports about what happened, you know, with this incident, because I believe it still has to go to trial, like I said. But the only thing that last thing that I'm aware of is that they, at least four of them, will not be facing Florida's death penalty. Okay, but again, it makes you wonder, you know, with these reports. Obviously, this thing with Jose came to light, and, you know, his murder, and it, you know, some type of justice was reached. Even though the best thing, of course, would have been that he would never have found himself killed at the hands of classmates with a machete. It makes you wonder, was there, I mean, I have heard that there was problems already with students going out and sale of drugs, etc. If other, you know, things have happened in these woods back here where people have come back and told me, hey, you know what, I heard it either firsthand, or I heard from somebody that, you know, something's going on out there, you know, especially people that have lived in this area for a while, and they kind of know the kind of weird noises that sometimes you hear in these woods, whether it's people partying or, you know, or whatever, music, distant music, because people are hanging out, you know. And like I said, because, you know, I am from this area, I do get a lot of people that send me like these third-hand reports telling me when they experience unusual things, or when they hear something and they are aware of what happened with this murder. In and of itself, that's very interesting. I'm going to follow up on it. But there's absolutely some type of supernatural angle to this, which is what is causing this to happen.
You can't be here.
I can't?
No, ma'am. You cannot be here, ma'am.
Hi, everybody. Well, you just saw me get shut down by the local security company that works that area. Okay. I mean, there was a conversation after that. They were pretty nice. Possibly because they just weren't sure if I had shut down and I wasn't, you know, capturing everything they said. So, but overall, they were pretty nice, some more than others. And even though I was on a public roadway. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to show you guys in just a second more information as far as the stories are concerned about exactly what happened with the murder of this young man. And almost in a way that it's not a far stretch of the imagination at all to believe that this whole scenario, that the death of this young man could have been avoided. But anyway, and at the end, I'm also going to explain to you guys why this story has such special interest for me. Okay, besides the fact that it happened, you know, in my neck of the woods. But I'm going to go ahead, I'm going to let you see these clips, which I think are going to shed a lot of light and bring you up to speed as to what I was talking about in the first segment. And then, like I said, at the end, I'm going to tell you why this holds a special, very special interest for me. So sit tight and here we go.
Well, it's become one of the most read stories on our NBC6 app. Four teens are now accused in the brutal murder of a Homestead teenager. And details of the case are disturbing. They all attended the Homestead Job Corps Center, where they skipped out of their dorms on June 28th. Investigators say 17-year-old Jose Guardado was lured by four classmates to a prepared gravesite, where he was hacked with a machete, partially buried and set on fire. But on top of that, police say that two of the suspects, including 18-year-old Desiree Strickland, who was in bond court today, then had sex near the victim's body. A prosecutor today described what Strickland did upon learning that she was charged with first-degree murder.
She then kicks several items inside of the interview room. It did take about three officers time to restrain her. She kicked one of them in the chest. When she actually destroyed the light socket, she took a screw out of the light socket and tried to pick the locks on her handcuff in order to get free.
Well, she's not going free anytime soon. All four machete murder suspects are being held without bond. And the grisly crime is shedding new light on the Job Corps Center in Homestead, a place where nearly 300 underprivileged youth are given a chance to learn about jobs and other skills. NBC6 investigator Tony Pipitone is live in our studio with more. Tony.
Yeah, less than 6 months ago, we learned Job Corps had been warned to crack down on violent students. And the Homestead Jobs Corps Center was among those that improperly kept them on campus in 2012 and 2013 after they should have been expelled. They were warned that would put students at risk. And while the Department of Labor says it took steps to correct those problems, it's now dealing with the tragic, senseless, barbaric murder of a 17-year-old boy, allegedly by his classmates. There are no signs of students at Homestead Job Corps Center now, nor of the horror some of them allegedly inflicted on 17-year-old Jose Santos Amaya Guardado in these woods nearly 2 months ago. In addition to vocational and academic training, YouTube videos suggest the 16 to 24-year-old students inside Job Corps Centers may encounter anything from this. Kind of a co-ed human vibrating recliner seen in a video titled Homestead Job Corps WTF Moment.
All right, good. Go.
Go.
To this, aspiring MMA style fighters described as being in Job Corps dormitories elsewhere,
you got it.
Or sometimes in Job Corps Center hallways. A physical assault that causes bodily harm is supposed to lead to automatic expulsion from Job Corps. But a Department of Labor Inspector General's report this year found Homestead Job Corps Center and others improperly downgraded zero tolerance assault violations to lesser infractions, allowing the violent students to remain. By retaining potentially dangerous students who should have been discharged, centers exposed other students and staff to avoidable potential harm, the inspector general stated. We tried to ask ResCare, which manages the Homestead Center for the Department of Labor, if the four Job Corps students charged so far in Jose's killing had prior disciplinary actions, but have received no answer. ResCare, based in Kentucky, sent its vice president of Job Corps operations to Homestead in the wake of the killing, but he referred all questions to the U.S. Department of Labor.
Can you tell us about what happened, Peter?
I've got to go. Thank you.
Well, do you or can you just not, you just don't want to talk to us?
Yeah, I'm just not able to make any comments.
The Department of Labor did tell us Jose's murder has prompted it to strengthen security at the Homestead Center and review it at all its 125 centers. It's also offering counseling and grief services for those students who may need it. NBC6 investigator Tony Pipitone, NBC6 News.
It's a horrifying case. Students accused of hacking another teen with a machete and burying his body in a shallow grave. Today, we're learning the state of Florida will not pursue the death penalty for four of the five defendants. NBC6 reporter Claudia DeCampo explains why.
The state is announcing that it is waiving the death penalty.
Prosecutors today waived the possibility of the death penalty if convicted for four out of the five suspects in the brutal death of 17-year-old Jose Guardado.
Based on these children's ages, I think that they did exactly the right thing in this matter.
On July 1st, 2015, Guardado's family found his mutilated body in the woods. He had been missing for a few days. The crime scene was near the Homestead Job Corps school he attended. Fellow students Christian Colon, Desiree Strickland, Jonathan Lucas, Joseph Cabrera, and Kahim Arbello all confessed their involvement in the murder. They allegedly planned on killing Guardado for a couple of weeks before they decided to go through with it.
They're all very young and mature. It's a very unusual case. The evidence is questionable as to Ms. Strickland, and with the changing landscape of the death penalty here in Florida, and it's changing all the time now.
But the death penalty still stands for Kahim Arbello. Detectives believe he was the one who hacked the victim to death with a machete while the other suspects watched. Even though four out of the five defendants will avoid death, they won't avoid spending the rest of their lives in prison if convicted of first-degree murder. For now, they haven't set a trial date yet. At the Metro Justice Building, I'm Claudia Docampo, NBC 6 News.
All right. Well, as you saw, you got the basically the skinny on what's happened with this case, you know, from the initial arrest to this last development that occurred just a few months ago concerning, you know, what they were going to do with with the prosecution of these. Now, I want to clarify, with the only minor in all of this was the victim. All of these people that were involved at the time that they committed this were all adults. And the reason why I'm saying this is the defense lawyers, of course, are referring to them as children. They weren't children. Okay, they weren't aged as children, let alone what they did is that they were not children. The only one that was technically underage, the age of 18, was Jose, the victim. All right? Because now I'm going to show you a little bit more information as to, you know, that at Job Corps, they accept you. I believe it's up to the age of 24, okay? Which I have a feeling that this poor kid, it was throwing a lamb to the wolves. And when I don't even mean specifically this, just in that setting, in and of itself, you know. Now I make reference also to the ritual killing, and here in South Florida, there's a lot of there's a big connection between Palo Mayombe, which is, lack of a better word, like the dark practice of Santeria. You see a lot of machetes used in their rituals, okay? Also the fact that sex act, which might or might not have anything to do with ritual. I just think it's very unusual. But then again, I'm going to tell you, even I was surprised, you know, how using machete to kill somebody is not as uncommon as I thought. For example, And I'm just going to go back to even recent stuff. In March of this year in Texas, two MS-13 gang members were charged with killing a woman with a machete for a satanic ritual. Okay? Then, just as a matter of fact, in May, what, a month ago, up in New York, in Nassau County, again, MS-13 members, they were charged with a machete attack. They didn't kill the person, but they attacked the person with a machete. And just a few days ago, there was a girl, a 16-year-old girl, who goes into a Walmart, shoplifts a machete, among other things. And then, when she gets an Uber to take her somewhere, and then she attacked and killed the Uber driver, who was a man, okay? And that just happened a few days ago, I say a week or so ago. So it's incredible, you know. And by the way, I'm not one of these people like banned the sale of machetes, because machetes have use. I've had one around my house for as long as I can remember, because especially when you live in a subtropical climate, it comes in very handy for slashing away and clearing your yard. So I'm just saying, the problem with the people that are out there, okay, the predators, because these are predators that are out there, and not only are they willing to kill somebody, but to me, just their choice of weapon speaks volumes, okay, about that they basically want to, there's such a sadistic angle or desire that when they inflict death on that person, they do it in the most painful way. But anyway, let me get off my soapbox. Now I'm going to show you a clip which shows that this incident that happened with Jose, far from being isolated, well, as far as the violence part anyway, is not isolated. And which is when I refer to that, when you look at it, it seems that the setting or what happened as far as the chaos that appears to have been going on with Job Corps is not isolated to this one center. I'm going to show you some information so you can see that. No, it's unfortunately very common, which leads me to believe, you know what? You know, everybody's destiny, it is what it is. But I can't help but think that this whole tragedy could have been avoided. Because honestly, it's no surprise that this kid, that what happened to him just ended up happening the way it did. I wish it hadn't, but it should not come as any surprise when you start looking at the surroundings that he was placed in. But take a look at this.
Federal Job Corps program is celebrating its 50th anniversary. Taxpayers shell out almost $2 billion a year to educate and train disadvantaged teenagers and young adults.
But is all that training doing little more than draining the taxpayers? Becky Oliver has been investigating the North Texas Job Corps in McKinney and is here with her story, Trouble at the Corps. Becky.
Stephen, Heather, drugs, sex assaults, violence, allegations of cheating and fraud, and you are picking up the tab.
I decided to go to Job Corps.
With their slickly produced commercials, the Job Corps looks like the ideal place.
I want a career, not a job.
For free education and career training.
I'm gonna pay some brake pads.
But a Fox 4 investigation finds a toxic environment riddled with crime.
I was getting threatened every day. Somebody was telling me they were gonna kill me.
We have an atrocious drug problem on center.
It went from fights to people having to go to the hospital.
It's just a horrible place.
Felipe Hernandez went to the Job Corps hoping to become a security guard, but it was his security that became an issue. He was jumped.
Felipe called me and he's like, you know, hysterical almost, and I'm like, you know, what the hell?
His mother, Retha, says she had to call 911 so an ambulance could take her son to the hospital.
Bruised his ribs, broke his nose, it crushed his orbital. You could see where the kids held him while the other, you know, kid beat him in his face and the other one kicked him.
There's zero tolerance for drugs, fighting, all that stuff is bogus.
Amber Fleming was a student in the culinary program. She says she was jumped right in the classroom.
She just got on top of me and started hitting me. She hit me like 3 times in my face.
Did anyone ever call the police?
Mm-mm.
It was insane. Absolutely insane.
Mike Jameson worked narcotics as a Chicago police sergeant. When he retired, he went to work as the head of safety and security at the Job Corps. He compares it to a third world country.
There's no rules. No laws that these students or the administration obeys.
There are signs posted outside the facility, no weapons, no drugs. But take a look at this video. A student recorded another student cutting something right on his school desk in the classroom. The student recording it took it to his counselor, Sandra Herndon.
Was that turned over to upper management, that video?
Oh, yes. In fact, my student was told to delete the video.
An internal report shows Jameson investigated and recommended terminating the student, but Herndon says it didn't happen.
Eventually, he just left because he did what we students do and they AWOL out of the program.
According to the Job Corps handbook, there's a zero tolerance policy. Violations mean automatic termination. There's even a written policy agreement between McKinney Police and the Job Corps that states the center will contact police regarding any illegal narcotics, assaults, or serious offenses.
Don't be scared.
But we found the Job Corps violating its own policy, even operating an amnesty program where kids caught with drugs face little or no discipline.
I was brought in, asked to flush those drugs, told you better not call the police. This is federal property we're talking about, and we're running amnesty. Okay, does that sound right? We're running amnesty.
Jameson says he complained to his employer he thought more students should be terminated. The Job Corps terminated him in June.
It's intimidation. That's what it is.
Former teacher Dr. Teresa Sanders took it a step further, filing complaints with lawmakers, the government, even the president. She finally quit.
The culture of the center is to keep them on center. And the easiest way to do that is to let them do whatever they want to do.
Let them go.
And with the drugs comes the violence. Employees tell us brutal assaults like this one are routine, even occurring on a weekly, sometimes daily basis.
So those 21 months, I saw more students being attacked than I ever saw during my whole police career.
And it's not just students attacking students. Even Jameson was attacked by a student leaving a knot on his head. And police reports show this student, Christopher Simmons, attacked two security guards. Simmons went to jail but was never prosecuted. His criminal record shows priors for drugs and theft. Our investigation found student after student with questionable backgrounds, raising issues about why they were ever allowed to enroll in the Job Corps. Students like Justin Lewis. He came to the Job Corps after a stint in state prison for burglary and evading arrest. He was busted for drugs at the Job Corps, and now we found him back in prison for assault. And Patrick Young had a prior drug offense before coming to the Job Corps. He was busted for assault deadly weapon while on campus. The victim ended up in the hospital, and the police report shows when police questioned the center director about why they were not called, Maria Martin told McKinney police it was not Job Corps policy to notify them.
Was anything ever reported to the police?
No, the police was not even called.
Teacher Kimberly Dillard says she resigned after a student became violent in her classroom.
He was throwing chairs, kicking.
She says the student headed to the cafeteria and got a knife. She headed out the door. Private contractors run the Job Corps centers, collecting about $45,000 in federal money for each student. The more students, the more success, the more money. The Federal Department of Labor awarded Career Opportunities, Inc., or COI, the contract to operate North Texas in 2010. Centers get annual report cards. Out of 125 centers, North Texas ranks 101. And yet, government spending reports show the top two administrators pulled down hefty six-figure salaries.
It makes me scared to go to sleep at night.
If I had one word, it would be hell.
Back in 1994, we reported trouble at the Corps, uncovering open drug use, violence, sexual activity at the same McKinney facility.
Tonight, an inside look into trouble at the Corps.
Our stories aired during congressional hearings and triggered change in the program. But 20 years later, the only real change appears to be the price tag.
It's the worst I've ever seen at our center. It is the absolute worst.
Ed Hall started at the Job Corps right after that story aired. He's now the new head of security. He's worked for five different contractors, and he says the entire culture changed when this contractor took over and began reprimanding staff for reporting kids' illegal behavior.
The students quickly figured out that staff's hands was tied, so to speak, and they could pretty much do a lot of things they wanted to do.
Former and current employees believe the program is all about keeping the numbers up, which creates a chaotic and volatile mixture of students. Regina Jackson recruited kids for almost 4 years. She couldn't do it anymore. She quit in May.
If you're telling them no tolerance for drugs, no tolerance for crime, mean that. Stand on it.
The concept of what Job Corps is supposed to be is phenomenal. What it is in reality is an absolute lie.
We're just messing their lives up. Just basically bringing them in, getting money for them, and just messing their lives up.
Now, we contacted the Department of Labor requesting an on-camera interview. The department asked for questions. We provided them, only to be sent over to the Office of Inspector General. So we contacted the OIG and got no response. The contractor's attorney also declined.
All right, so here we are. We're at the end. And you saw that even in Texas, that was pretty remarkable. That's a nice way of putting it. I think that was a great piece, you know, where you... They actually show footage and they interview people that used to work there. And you could tell they were basically driven out because either fear for their lives or because they were fired. And, you know, when I found out about this, I was shocked because they made a very good point. You know, the taxpayers are paying for this, and there's absolutely a very significant amount of incentive why they want to keep these students there at these Job Corps centers when they should be gone, you know. But Hey, that's something else. Now I'm going to tell you why the story of Jose's holds such special interest for me. I'm going to tell you why, because I knew who Jose was. Okay. When this initially came out, I didn't know that this Jose was the Jose I knew, because Jose is a very, very common name here in South Florida. It's a very common Hispanic name. And to be honest with you, usually the way I saw him wasn't the way I saw him in the pictures. I was before I got cut off by that security guard, I was getting to that point, and then, you know. Now, what happened was, and what Jose would do was that he would sell ice cream. He was a little ice cream vendor in a flea market down here in this area. And my son, for a couple of years, was a vendor of that flea market. And every once in a while, I would go out there and I would help him out. And that's the flea market that Jose worked at. But the thing was that Jose would either wear a little hat or he had a little hoodie on all the time. So when I saw that first picture, but then when I read it's like, and I was like, oh my God, then I realized the big glasses and everything, that this was the Jose that I knew from the flea market. And he was a nice kid. Okay? This kid, I remember him trudging around. He's pushing his little ice cream cart. And he would just sell ice cream. And of course, a lot of times, more often than not, it's really, really hot. And as a matter of fact, even my son, when he was out there by himself, he would say, hey, you know, give him some money, say, can you run and get me something to eat? And Jose would do that for my son. Okay. I'm telling you, you know, I didn't know him well, because I didn't, but I knew him enough because I saw him a lot of times that I was out there at that location. I would see this kid trudging along, selling ice cream, you know, doing his thing. And, you know, after a while, you know, just like vendors get to know other vendors, you get to know all these people that you see there all the time. And it profoundly shocked and saddened me even more so when I realized who he was, because this kid did not deserve that. Honestly, I can tell you, you know, I didn't know him profoundly, but you know what, when you see this kid just going around with an ice cream cart, you know, selling ice cream, maybe running errands for people that were there, the vendors at the flea market, I mean, nobody deserves this. Don't get me wrong. There's no human being that deserves to be killed, much less in this way. But I'm telling you, it brought it personally, I guess, like all things, when you know who that victim is, which is why I have this special interest in what happened. And believe it or not, despite, you know, what you could feel or say about the perpetrators, it makes me think, how did these five people get to the point that they would be willing to do this? That's the part that right there is, God knows, okay? How do you become a monster? Because I'm sorry, that's what I consider you. I don't care what your age is, that you're capable not only of doing it, but of actually being an accomplice in the planning and execution, and just watch another human being getting hacked by a machete across the face, okay, being put probably partially alive in the ground and buried, and not do anything about it. And then, of course, you know, not calling the police. I mean, there was no conscience there. I don't know what else to call it. You know, so again, you know, I'll be keeping up with what happens with this case, but I'm telling you, it's things like this that it makes you wonder if it, and by the way, which I think is really important, and you saw it in that last clip, Job Corps is not obligated and didn't call the family and tell anybody. The only reason why Jose got found was that he had a family. Not only did he have a family, he had a family who became really alarmed when they couldn't find him, okay, because he was the youngest of all his siblings, okay, and they kind of put their little search parties together, okay, because it wasn't the cops that discovered Jose. They came in after the fact when he was found by his brother, okay, and I made mention of it briefly. Makes me wonder, did anything ever happen to other kids, not only there, in any other places, which didn't have any families, to say, hey, I haven't seen my kid, or I haven't seen my nephew, or I haven't seen so-and-so. What happened to them? You know, are there any other shallow graves out there? All right? With undiscovered victims? You know, I don't want to be dramatic here, but I think that, yeah, there's just that possibility that somewhere this same scenario worked out and nobody's ever gone ahead and looked for that missing person. And unfortunately, I know that that's more common than most people think. But anyway, guys, all right, I want to stop with the sad stuff. I hope you liked this show. I thought it was really interesting. Like I said, I just explained to you my own special interest in this case. Okay, I think it's sad overall. Sad, very sad for the victim, for their family, but also sad for these perpetrators as to how they got from being born innocent children to doing this. So I hope you like the show. I hope you subscribe. I hope you hit the like button, and I hope you come back every week, all right, and look at all my new interesting stuff. And I always like to say thank you so much for taking the time and viewing all the neat stuff that I'm bringing to you guys. So take care.